This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Comedian Lewis Black is best known for a style of performance that demands what you might call perpetual exasperation. So much so that he was cast to voice the emotion anger in the Pixar animated film Inside Out. He's also well known for what's now been decades of commentary on Comedy Central's The Daily Show, spanning original host Craig Kilborn through the Jon Stewart era and continuing with Trevor Noah. Back in January, he went on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon and played a game offering opinions on demand.
Here we go.
Who wrote the music? Oh, vaccines. Oh, ooh. Oh! I'll tell you this, I've been triple vaxxed. If I could fill my bathtub every day with the vaccine, I'd hop right in it. I would wash myself with vaccine. I got no problem with it. Look, we live in a country, I don't understand why people don't do it. They're taking supplements, we've scarfed them down. We spend billions of dollars, we eat them, we eat supplements like they're candy. CBD oil, for God's sake. It comes from a weed at the side of the road. And people are like, oh, chuggy chug chug. I take something called ashwagandha. It's an herb that comes from India. It's supposed to calm you down. Doing a great job.
Lewis Black has won Grammy Awards for his comedy albums and written three best-selling books. He's currently on his Off the Rails tour and will be performing Saturday, April 30th at the Chicago Theater and Sunday, May 1st at the Virginia in Champaign. He joins us now. Lewis Black, welcome to the 21st show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for playing the Jimmy Kimmel segment.
So we just came out of a conversation on the pandemic and the current state of masking. I wonder, how are you feeling about COVID-19 these days?
Oh, it's great. It's a tremendous step forward for humanity. It's insane. I mean, the way in any normal country, any country with normality, that both sides would have come to together at the very beginning and tried to figure out how to deal with it, as opposed to making it a political mask. People say, you know, oh, you put on a mask, you're taking away my freedom. Look, if I made you put a ball gag in your mouth first and then covered you with a mask, that would take away your freedom. But it's I find masking, for me, my mother's 103. Okay, yeah, I go to see her as often as I can. I need to be sure that I'm not bringing that virus in the house. And, you know, and a lot of the time since I'm vaxxed up, you know, you might get it and not know you have it. So I wear a mask as often as I can, and I'm very comfortable with it.
Yeah, it's not a competition. My grandmother's 106, same situation.
And that's the way I feel about the vaccine. My joke now about the vaccine is I take the vaccines because my mother has taken every vaccine, and she's 103. And I do feel that I'm not comfortable with the mask in the sense of it's a comfortable thing to wear. I'm comfortable with it as just that level of protection, and you understand that.
Yeah. I mean, people are angry about having to wear the masks. Other people are angry about those not wearing masks. I admit to feeling that myself sometimes, at least when transmission was higher. People just seem angry in general. Does it strike you as different now than where it's been in 10, 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah, because it wasn't about reality. 20 or 30 years ago, it was about their opinion about how to deal with reality, but we kind of had a shared reality. Okay, we all agreed on a lot of things. We didn't think, there wasn't a group of us that kind of went off and said, oh, you know, John F. Kennedy Jr. is going to arrive in Dealey Plaza. No, that was a very tiny, tiny segment, and they certainly didn't get any publicity for that kind of thing. But now we really do. We're you know, it used to be fighting about your opinions, and that kind of lowers the temperature. Also, being away from each other. We've been separated for 2 years, you know, and so usually the person that you now scream at through the social media is somebody who's in your office who roots for the same, you know, basketball team you root for, or football team, or whatever. So you kind of share that in common. And all of that's been kind of thrown out the window, and it leaves us. I mean, you don't get to democracy unless you share reality. And I used to do it as a joke, and now it's become real.
Yeah. What was your pandemic experience like? No Zoom comedy shows for you, right?
No, that's, I found that like being on Hollywood Squares without, you know, Paul Lynde in the center. It made no sense. It wasn't any fun. I need to be in front of the audience, okay? I write in front of the audience. I don't really, I take notes, I think about stuff, but when I'm on stage, that's when I'm writing my act. And they seem to be very conscious of that and seem to be really, give me a lot of space in terms of that. It wasn't until I could get out live. And I have to say that it's been you know, great getting back. But my pandemic experience is really the subject of what I'm talking about in my act now. It's really my experience with the pandemic from start to where we are now and what I went through. Because I didn't handle it well.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. There were people who seemed to be experiencing a renaissance of the human spirit. I was a mess.
No new sourdough starters for you?
None for me. There were none right. whatsoever. And I, you know, and how much, and you know, and then I could never figure out how much Clorox to put on my food.
All right, we need to take a break. We're going to continue our conversation with Lewis Black, who again is performing multiple shows in Illinois in the coming week, in Chicago on Saturday, in Champaign on Sunday. You can find information about that at his website. We'll have a link to that on our website, 21stshow.org. We're going to continue this conversation. If you want to join us, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Part of his show these days involves getting suggestions from the audience ahead of time to talk about some local issues. So you can start that process now if you want. 800-222-9455. More with comedian Lewis Black here on the 21st Show in just a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with comedian Lewis Black, who you probably know from The Daily Show, his Grammy-winning comedy albums, multiple books. He's also an actor. He's currently on tour for the Off the Rails tour and is performing this Saturday in Chicago and Sunday at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us, that's 800-222-9455. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about the pandemic, and I heard someone on a podcast over the weekend talking about this mask mandate being dropped, and they had this observation that the mandate probably doomed it, right? The idea that it was a mandate. Americans don't like mandates. You could have a free cookies mandate. People would probably start eating vegetables out of spite. So as someone who thinks professionally about language and how people respond to it, what do you think of the way people have been communicated to during the pandemic?
Terrible. No adults, no sense of it. Neither side knows how to use the English language anymore. So it's, you know, and that has to do with their take on reality. It's just beyond belief. If they had just agreed to kind of figure out a way to get folks to really do, you know, and to do what should be done and to maintain the thing that we've lost, which is empathy. Because really, you know, I keep saying in my act, I don't think I'll come up with a joke for this, but I naively felt that, you know, and maybe just because I'm stupid, that when, you know, when they said warp speed, we're going to have this vaccination, that people would just get vaccinated.
Yeah.
You know, so I didn't think that this was going to be a problem, and that if you said, you know, it would be good if you wear a mask. And this thing with this mandate, you know, this is something I'll be talking about this week in my rantcast that I send out, which my podcast kind of thing. You know, they came up with this thing, and you know, the guy, who the woman and the judge down there says, okay, we're going to get rid of this mandate. This is gone, and. So you kind of have to have, like, we're going to do this in 2 weeks, not tomorrow. You have people getting on planes with it who are immunocompromised, okay? You can't just say, okay, go for it. Let's see where we are. Because we're also at that point where there's another variant. Whether you like it or not, I live in New York. They seem to come here first. It's kind of, they come off Ellis Island, and then they pop over here.
If you can make it there, you'll make it anywhere, right?
Yes. but that's what I've noticed, because I've noticed it because friends of mine were starting to get it just recently, you know, who'd been vaxxed and all. So it was another wave.
Do you get nervous being out on tour? I mean, are you sort of doing the Howard Hughes thing backstage before the show, or how are you approach that?
I mean, I've got a kind of a pod that I'm with, so that helps. But I kind of have there's a certain amount of my brain that still be, and I think it's for many of us, for, at least for, you know, there's some, a lot of us that were, you're partly my, part of my foot is in what it was like, and part of my foot is in what it's going to be, you know, that it's, you know, that things are getting better. So that partly my brain goes, oh yeah, now I'm feeling really, and then I go, oh no, I didn't do the mask thing. Sometimes I forget my mask. I move into a minor panic. And you know, and none of this should be really happening, except that we're transitioning from a completely unique situation that we lived through to, you know, going back into society. And it's been, for me, I still, my brain will stop not, you know, yelling at me from time to time.
All right, so I want to ask you a little more about your process. You talked about how you make notes. You don't necessarily have a script. There are some stand-ups we know. I've seen Jerry Seinfeld a number of times, right? He rehearses that show and works on it and workshops it. Yours, I think, and I know because I've seen it about 15 years ago in Springfield was the last time, but you know, you evolve with current events. You're reacting to things in real time. You're bringing in local events. Can you talk about a little more about your process and how you approach that?
I mean, it usually starts, with something that makes me angry. Because I'm funniest, that was the first big discovery. You know, what is it that makes you funny? And when I'm angry, people think it's funny when I get angry. And because I bluster through and kind of get lost and kind of go over the top. And as many kids say, you're just like my dad, only you're funny. So I kind of have that, you know, that's where I start. So
was
I
that an accidental something. Discovery, or were you like that as a young person?
I was like that, and I had a sarcasm that was kind of built in part by the way my parents perceived the world. My mother was really sarcastic, and my father knew kind of like, okay, you've gone far enough, stop it. You've gone over the edge. So it was a good balance, and you don't really realize it when you're getting up on stage for the first time, and at least I didn't. There are very few naturals in terms of comedy that I've seen. And so you have to kind of discover that part of yourself that really is the funny part, and in part you don't want to reveal that because what if they don't like it? Then they don't like you.
Yeah, and you did playwriting work, right? You, for a long time, you studied theater in college, you've written plays. What drew you more to comedy over time?
Just being broke. Being profoundly, profoundly broke. And because, and the other reason really was because I had a small theater that I worked at literally just off Times Square in the basement of a restaurant with a downstairs theater bar, we called it. And we had 100 seats. We did all sorts of plays. And I kept going. And I, on the side, I was doing stand-up down there just for fun and introducing all the plays. And that was what people, you know, seemed to be responding to, especially people in the entertainment business. So all of a sudden I was getting, you know, people were bringing me in to audition for movies and stuff. And so so I ended up in, you know, kind of Hannah and Her Sisters, partly because I was down there, and it kind of moved me toward that direction. And theater, just, I got tired of fighting it. And apparently alcoholics who ran clubs seemed to be more amenable to my work than people who demanded of me that I come up with, you know, months and years of training in order to be able to have my work seen on stage. So I went with the drunks.
So you talked about the pandemic sort of inspiring. That seems like the wrong word to use, doesn't it? This show.
It's true.
I'm curious, we said earlier you didn't do Zoom comedy, but your segments on The Daily Show were still like, they're the ones I've seen on online and in the show there was not a studio audience. So can you talk about, like, how do you gear up for that? And how does it differ delivering, you know, a disquisition to a camera versus to a room full of people?
Well, what's funny is I've done that for so long, these kind of the rants on The Daily Show that I did, and they're kind of written in part by some by myself and some by writers and stuff, and I'm just kind of, I know how to play that. It's, I'd almost say it's like, you know, this is, but it's like reading a score in, if you're playing an instrument, okay?
Yeah.
So my instrument is, I'm a big barking dog. So it's, rah, rah, rah. So I kind of know, I almost know, you can hand me the rant, and then doing I've been doing this thing called The Rant Is Due after every show, where I read literally the rants written by the audience that has come to see it. Or so when I'm coming to, you know, Chicago or Champaign, that folks are, I've asked folks, you know, to start sending in their rants, and I'll read those. And I was doing it during the pandemic. It was the one thing I knew that could keep me in touch with my comedy, was is I know how to make something that someone, and they all kind of have a sense of how, you know, of my character in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so they write for it, and they've gotten, you know, this is 5 years of folks writing this stuff. And now they've gotten so good at it that it's very easy for me to read it and make it funny. And it really kept me in touch with my sense of humor and how to play it. It was a lot easier than anything, than trying. I would try to do these introductions to my rants, and I was going, this is not funny yet. I need you to be there for this, for me to find out what's funny about what I'm saying.
What are some of the most interesting rants that you've gotten from your fans?
There were six about pickles. That was one. They start writing them, and then somebody hates pickles. Then somebody writes back, you don't know anything, you idiot. Pickles are the most wonderful thing on earth. I pickle, and then somebody writing about how they put their pickles in jars. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. A guy, one of the greatest ones I read was a guy wrote in, he had opened a jar. He thought it was supposed to be, I think, smooth peanut butter, and it was crunchy. And he went on for 7 minutes, almost in a spectacular fashion, ranting and raving about what a profound disappointment it was, and who did this to him, and how could it possibly, and there's no comparison between crunchy and smooth. And then people wrote in about that. And it's, or then it goes to the other end of the spectrum, where I have people writing in about dealing with our healthcare system, veterans who come from all ends of the spectrum about how they are dealing with the VA, or dealing with how they're treated, or dealing with, like, there's at least six or seven that I've had about how different veterans look at the way, you know, in terms of gun violence. And that's really, to me, a lot of what the key to it is, in a sense, that of where they're kind of those that are not funny. They range from the sublime to the brilliant, to the angry, to the ridiculous.
Yeah, boy, that's a lot heavier.
Yeah,
that's a term I was not expecting.
I've kind of added,
right?
That. I've added it, yeah. Because they were sending in stuff, and sometimes it's so much better. I felt that somebody heard a direct address from someone who was actually going through something and not being questioned by somebody in a news show. You know?
Yeah. No, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit. This is kind of off topic, but I saw George Carlin many years ago, and he had. So alienated. This was in Urbana, actually, or Champaign at Assembly Hall there. It was a free show for undergrads, and he was going off on abortion and pedophilia and the Catholic Church and all this stuff, and people were leaving in droves. And then at one point, when about three-quarters of the audience had left, he said, "Who wants to hear some fart jokes?" And just kind of amazingly turned things around. How do you manage that? I mean, we're in such a heavy time now. You know, manage the audience in you know, making them laugh while we're also, you know, dealing with this collective tragedy.
Well, I mean, I think in part it's because they know what to expect from me. I have I've got that kind of an audience. I mean, I've done it for so long. that I really do try to keep a balance, that I'm not out there to you know, I that's the reason, I mean, when people say, you know, oh, you know, George Carlin was really the, I try to go to the line. I'm not a big crosser of the line, but I push that line. But I'm really not there. I'm not there to kind of taunt or alienate. Every so often I snap and I'll go over the line and I'll say, oop, I went too far. And I do get people, you know, who walk out, but I don't get them walking out in droves, because I do, I've ultimately felt that I have to, whether I like it or not, I have to entertain them.
Yeah.
And I do, and it took, and certainly I, and from the very beginning after, the, over, like before the pandemic, I found that, you know, people were, it was the most that people were getting upset, you know, I would talk about, the former leader, I'd talk about him, and then they'd go, how come you're not talking about Obama? And then I'd have to explain that he was no longer the president. And I've kind of gone back and forth. I've tried to be as even-handed as possible, because it's pretty easy to be even-handed about both sides. Both sides really don't really have any sense of what the fact it is other than winning an election. And they've got to get back to reality. We do not have time anymore for them yelling and screaming and making up nonsense and pushing. Okay, most of us are in the middle. That's where it's going to take place. And that's when I really became irritated, when I realized that, you know, I who'd been, you know, way out in a lot of the things that I, and still am, but I realize as a, you know, an adult who's lived long enough, that where it all gets decided is in the middle. I've been pushed to the middle.
All right.
Well, and that is really rough.
Yeah. Well, if listeners want to share reality with Lewis Black, they can do so this Saturday at the Chicago Theater and Sunday, May 1st, at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. Lewis Black, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
I really appreciate it, and it was nice, nice to have this time with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And that is all the time we have for our show today. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey, Aiden Choate, and Erica Scalise, who's also our engagement producer. And our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brio Skolark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.